you know, a bat uses a radar system that can hear much higher than any human can, but I didn't know at that time when I began to do that when I was a little boy, like on a still day, you could walk by just maybe four or five weeds in a patch that stood up past the little boy's shoulder, and I could hear the grass rustle echo off of that, things like that. If I was in 4 or 5 feet of it, I could tell where it was. Anything that had a tone to it, I was apt to beat on it. Sometimes Mom would say, "Honey, get out on the porch for that. I've got a headache. You're bursting my head." And I'd go on the porch, hammer and beat on something that made a good sound, I thought. They'd get me sometimes two little tin cans. One of them had a different tone. They'd be like, bing, bong, bing, from one to the other. Or I love the cowbell, especially where they had two or three around there, and they'd have different tones. Dad was a harmonica player, and when he got me my first little harmonica, I must have been 5 or 6.
So your dad gave you that harmonica?
It was a C, too, and he said, "Now, son, this thing got notes on it, just like the ones you hear me sing in the songbook, like do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do." And then he played the scale, sort of. And I said, "Now, some of them you push and some of them you pull," and then laughed. Said, "You learn to play a tune like Home Sweet Home, single note first." And then he said, "Once you get to where you can find the notes on there pretty good, then you can start noting it with your tongue like I do." He said, "It'll sound like this when you first learn how to play it, single note." And then when you learn to note it with your tongue, it sounds like this. Uncle Jerome had bought him a big old floor model Victrola, and he had a small one that he wanted to sell. He mentioned something to Dad about it, and Dad said, "I'd like to buy that thing. What do you take for it?" And he said, "Well, if you and the boys got time, you push for money." He said, "If you want to work a week for him at the sawmill, you can have it. And there's 50 records that goes with it." And Dad said, "I believe we'll do that." And him and I think I worked 4 days. It wasn't a full week or something. Dad come carrying it in. I thought we had the king's treasure. We had some blues recordings by people like John Hurt and Furry Lewis. We had a couple of Memphis Jug Band, Cannon's Jug Stompers. And then there was a Dixieland jazz record or two, one or two of the Skillet Lickers recordings, Clayton McMitchin and Gid Tanner. And then there was a few good old gospel records, Smith's Sacred Singers.
Whatever happened to those records?
We wore them out, every one of them. There was a place called the Green Inn, a little bed and breakfast place there in Boone. And in the basement, Mr. Richard Green had a little music store. He sold guitars and banjos, and he also sold records. One of the main things that he carried was good blues.
Hmm. That's interesting that many mountain people would have been buying blues records.
It's amazing how many people here in these mountains loved blues at that time. You know, music is the thing that bridges the gap between cultures. I remember once on the road, I got to inject this into this. Merle and I were doing a festival somewhere, and I overheard Sonny Terry talking to Lightning Hopkins, and he said, "You ever hear Doc Watson and Merle Watson play?" He said, "Man, I don't care anything about that old hillbilly music." He said, "Just let me tell you, man, you just want to listen one time, and you will."
What a nice compliment.
And me and Merle played some pretty good, about four good blues tunes on that, and old Lightning was a friend.
He loved it after that.
It bridges the gap. In 1934, and Dad made me a little homemade banjo. Had a cat skin head on it. First, he put a groundhog skin head on it, and it was too thick. It didn't work good. He was splitting stove wood, and I was getting me a big armful to take in the house to put in the wood box for Mama. And my brother come up through the yard with something in a little sack and a big bucket of water in the other hand, and Dad said, "Lenny, what you got in that sack?" He said, "I got Granny's poor old cat that's got too old to live any longer, and she wanted me to put it out of its misery." And I told her I couldn't do it, and she said, "Son, I'll give you 50 cents, if you will. I just ain't got the heart. It couldn't see, and it couldn't eat." So Dad thought about it a minute, and he said, "I seen a Joe Rogers advertisement in Sears Roebuck for a banjo head. If you boys will skin that thing, I'll make you a banjo head out of it." Well, we both dreaded it, but Lenny said, "Well, I bet that would sound good. I bet that'd be as clear as you could read a paper through it when Dad gets done with it." And between Dad and Lenny, they got that thing right and all the hair off of it. It was just about clear. It's had a beautiful sound, too. My dad and my cousin Virgil Carroll were working on the WPA at the time, and they got to talking about the little homemade banjo, and Dad said, "I want to get him a better one sometime, as soon as I can." And Virgil said, "I got one I'll sell you. I can't pick for nothing." And he said, "I don't know why I ever bought it. I'll sell it to you for $7. He said, "That's what I got in it, and that young'un needs it." And Dad said, "Well, I'll pay you for it as long as I can," he said. "Just a dollar or two now and then. Don't pay it all down."
80 cents a day, it took a while.
Boy, I'm glad I got a hold of it. I wish somehow Dad could know I've still got it and how good it sounds.
He was very encouraging to you in playing music. Did he think that you might be a musician?
I think he knew.
Mm-hmm.
I think somehow he really knew, because he handed me this thing. The last time I tried to get him to pick me a tune on it, he picked it up and handed it to me and said, "Now, you pick me one. Said, I want you to learn to pick it good. Might help you get through the world, son." I came home from school in 1936, and my oldest brother Otis was still at home, and he had bought a little Crosley four-tube radio, had enough batteries with that thing to run a sawmill. And man, I thought that was something, and it was pretty nice. And I began to hear Charlie and Bill Monroe on the radio. We'd already found one or two of their recordings at that time. What would you give in exchange, I think, and I forgot what was on the other side. And the radio began to add a bunch of notions to my love of music. Down in the 40s, I began to hear Hank Garland and Grady Martin in Nashville. Hank played the electric guitar, and I guess Grady did part of the time. Played fiddle tunes like Old Joe Clark, you know, and Pretty Little Widow, Sugarfoot Rag, a bunch of those things. And I thought, by ginger, if they can play fiddle tunes on the guitar, I believe I can do it on the flat top. But I fooled around with a few and actually learned a few. But I really didn't develop the flat picking fiddle tunes till in the 50s. I played the electric guitar. I'll jump ahead for a minute here. I played the electric guitar with a little local dance band, and most of the time they didn't have a fiddler, and I'd have to play the lead on the hoedowns, you know, the breakdown tunes for square dancing on the electric guitar. And boy, that gave me about almost 10 years of good technical practice.